This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The generally accepted figure is that about half of all healthcare dollars are spent on just 5% of patients. So we are spending a little time this week on ways to change that equation, specifically on the relationship between spending on social services and healthcare costs, because the potential savings there are huge. But as Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports now from the Health Desk at WHYY, finding the services that are going to simultaneously improve health and lower costs, yeah, not so easy.
Indiana Jones, he's not.
I'm a 5'7 guy from Portland, Oregon, raised in a Jewish family.
Okay, a little more Woody Allen than Harrison Ford. But like the daring archaeologist from the movies, Dr. David Labbe is after a rare and elusive prize. He wants to keep chronically ill and poor patients in Portland from landing in the hospital again and again.
These are people who have lived in some form of constant crisis, so they know how to survive in crisis. They don't know how to take care of a chronic disease. And so they come to us for help. What we think is help to them is not helpful. It doesn't work for them. It doesn't work for us. We just have to start over.
What doesn't work is prescribing meds that must be kept cool for someone who doesn't have a refrigerator. What doesn't work is pressing patients to eat better when they don't know where their next meal's coming from. But Labbe thinks he's finally found a way to get that fresh start, to work with these super sick, super expensive patients.
What I've learned is if I'm going to help somebody, I really need to know about their life, what it's like for them on a day-to-day basis. And that takes a lot of work to really understand.
That means leaving the exam room, seeing patients in their kitchens, in their living rooms. To do that, Labbe and others at the insurance company Care Oregon created the Health Resilience Program. Now, health resilience specialists, effectively social workers like Marika Shimkus,
senses it.
Spend a chunk of their time dropping in on patients like Scott Freeland.
How old am I?
You're 52.
I'm 52. And happy to be alive.
Finishing each other's sentences is easy for these two.
Without you, I would be lost almost sometimes.
I don't know about that.
She is really good at her job, and she'll even let me use her phone to call and make appointments at the doctor's office or something.
I mean, I want to make sure that it's clear that the credit is really you. You've let me pester you.
Marika's job is to pester Scott and her 20 other clients to help them figure out what they need to take care of themselves and to hook them up to services like housing and food, or maybe help someone get an ID, maybe make an appointment with a specialist. The program serves about 600 of the sickest and most expensive Medicaid patients in the city. For Scott, it's made a difference. He says before he met Marika, he was living hard.
I think that year I was in the hospital 17 times or something. I was doing crystal meth, the devil's dandruff. Every time I did it, I'd start throwing up blood. I've had to have transfusion before. My throat's been so raw. It's messed my eyes up too. My diabetes has. It's a crazy life that I used to lead, but I'm doing actually pretty good now.
Matched with Marika, he was in the hospital once in their first year together. The Health Resilience Program cranks out these sorts of stories. In 2.5 years, this program has put up some gaudy numbers, cutting ER and hospital visits by 35%. Labbe and the team are now household names in this little corner of the healthcare world, where doctors try to administer social services to solve medical problems. The consulting firm Oliver Wyman says we could save $300 billion a year if this type of work scaled. That could mean lower costs for all of us. This is what Healthcare City of Gold looks like, where money is saved and health is better.
There are so many things we do in American healthcare because we think that they must work.
Amitabh Chandra is an economist at Harvard.
We have incredibly powerful narratives that each one of these things is going to generate billions and billions of dollars in savings. But every time we've looked, we found the answer has been a big, giant zero.
We asked Chandra to look over data from the Health Resilience Program, and he says while the program may improve health, it's impossible to say whether it's saving any money long term. But odds are these sorts of programs are unlikely to save any real money, says Dr. Ashish Jha.
There are almost no interventions that we know of that both improve health and save money. I mean, there are a couple of things that we do know. Vaccinations are probably the number one thing. Once you get beyond that, it starts getting pretty tough.
Jom, who's also at Harvard, says what makes this work tough is that patients each have their own costly web of issues and illnesses that can't be resolved with a one-size-fits-all solution, like a vaccine. Pinpointing the underlying social challenges can be a guessing game for doctors, where they try to tackle very deep, persistent problems like addiction, mental illness, and obesity with treatments that often don't work. These obstacles, not to mention limited evidence, help explain why there's no line of healthcare CFOs outside Labby's door.
Until we have a business case to really take this on, I think it's going to end up being a series of pet projects.
Since his great run that first year working with Marika, Scott's life has become complicated again. A few months back, he got beat up trying to protect his cousin from her husband.
He broke my jaw and broke me a couple of ribs and was in the hospital for 10 days.
Additional health complications and drinking has led to an uptick in trips to the ER. Scott says he's trying to keep things under control, and then his cell phone rings.
Hey, can I call you back? Yeah? Oh. Okay.
This is Scott's cousin telling him he's bought him some beer. The cousin and Scott's uncle live next door.
They're my closest friends, you know, that I have, and I hang out with them quite a bit, watch TV, and they drink every day, like, a lot.
The hard reality of this work is that you're trying to help fix someone's life, one full of half-steps, missteps, and backslides.
They first tell me you can't have sugar, then they tell me I can't have salt. Now, it's like, you guys kind of want me to stop drinking, too? It's like, eh. I probably will never, ever stop drinking. Just trying to be realistic, you know? And sometimes you almost have to drink just to get through all your problems and stuff. I don't know.
Is this what success looks like? Progress and then relapse? How much time and money do you invest in trying to help someone like Scott? Is Scott's setback just temporary? Important questions, says Labby, that he admits are hard to answer.
Our experience has been that people we're dealing with have had really rough lives, and they're not going to recover from those lives or the effects of those lives in one moment.
The program's goal is to build stable lives. That takes time, which takes money. It's a tough enough road that it's fair to wonder if the Labbies of the world see something in this healthcare jungle that most of us can't, or if he's a deluded do-gooder lost on a never-ending quest. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Dan's story was produced for us with support from the California Endowment Health Journalism Fellowships. They are at USC Annenberg, just down the road.